Hello there. It's your Chapo Trap House. We are coming to you from the very last day of our tour here in Portland, Oregon, live from Amber's hotel room. Four cities, seven shows, podcasts for you. On top of all of that, folks, we are through the ringer, worn out.
We are famished. Drained of content.
The entire crew has come down with a case of soy face, and we're all suffering. We all have terrible soy face. Yep.
You guys are going to get the very dregs at the bottom of our barrel of content. You're getting the Vegemite of our barrels of content.
We're coming home all...
Me and Chris are the only people that didn't get sick on this trip.
Me, I either.
Okay.
You were
okay.
Just in the hospital.
Let's, yeah, let's we'll let that pass.
No, absolutely not. You're going to Belushi yourself. Calm down.
So we thought we would turn to you guys, turn to the fans to hear from you, interact with you. Normally, I eschew that like the plague, like leprosy. But here we are. And I think we're going to we are on the Reddit, on the Chapo subreddit.
I am not looking at it. I've never looked at it once, and I never will. We're having
Chris is on the the prophylactic through which we have breached this membrane.
I would like to make it clear that this should be construed as a liminal period where it is acceptable solely within this next hour for you to address us with any questions that you may have.
We are tearing the veil of Maya.
After this period ends, after this recording ends, there is to be no communication with us whatsoever. There to be no questions about things that were said on the program, particularly if they were said by someone else about a country that perhaps the rest of us are not familiar with, or what could be construed as a terrorist group that none of us have donated to. Please don't ask us about these countries or these comments.
Oh, yes. Felix is not with us at the moment. He's with his other friends now.
Yeah, he's...
He's with his Fortnite friends. They're having fun without us.
He's cheating on us with his other content creators.
Never cry about a podcast.
So we are just about to head home to the East Coast, but before then... We got to come through for you guys. So hopefully you will come through for us. What do you say, guys? Let's dive in to what is on our fans, our specific subset of fans, I should note, the ones in the Reddit. What is on their mind? So let's start with the first question selected by producer Chris.
I'm going to start getting right to the core of what the fans demand. This is from user Patigen. What are your fursonas?
Oh, that's easy. Like okay. a fox cat.
A fox cat?
Yeah, I got a tail and I've got cat ears.
Doesn't a fox already sort of have cat-like ears?
Kinda,
why don't you just be a fox?
No.
A fox cat?
That's ridiculous.
Okay, this is a good question to kick it off with. Matt, how about you?
I think I would be a big old bear. Maybe in overalls.
What kind of bear?
A country bear.
Your country bear?
Basically one of the country bears.
Like a Berenstain bear.
From the jamboree.
Like when the Berenstain bears became farmers.
You got a big old hootin' jug.
I got a hootin' jug. I got a straw piece in my mouth. I got a hat with a top open. Barefoot is the day I was born.
Oh. I can't say I have ever considered this. I don't fucking know. What do you guys think?
I think you'd be a...
bless me with a persona.
I think you could
I think
be
some sort of Arctic fox.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Yeah, I like
that.
Yeah. You know, I just don't want to, like, you know, bite Virgil's style.
Oh, that's fine. No, we're...
I mean, the thing with the persona is it's always going to be very heavily some sort of wild dog or wild cat, because those are to humans instinctively the sexiest and coolest animals. So.
Oh yeah,
and also they're mammalian, and no one's going to be like a dolphin. It's not furry.
Oh yeah, exactly.
There are dolphin furries. There's narwhal furries. It runs the gamut. I'm
but
telling
I would
not
argue
furry.
That's not furry.
Yeah.
Well, it falls within the rubric of
they are technically
wearing
mammalian, and I guess they do have like.
Hair.
They do have hair.
Well, you wear like what you're wearing a costume made of felt. I don't think you're going to be a sleek dolphin or whale or what have you. I'm curious if there's bacteria furries.
What if there's like a like a hippo, and they have to keep moist constantly. So they have like their partner like spray mist them regular. Like
that
like
would be
Fiona.
A commitment to the character.
Yeah,
I myself, I would probably go as some sort of dog, you know, like a coyote or fox. Those are cool, but I don't want to bite anyone else's style. So I think I'm going to be original, and my persona is going to be the noble and lazy capybara.
Yeah.
I'd be a capybara persona. That'd be my furry alter ego.
Kind of your,
God, those guys rule.
That's who you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Capybaras are the best.
Sort of like hairy, a little bit rotund, but just chilling.
Everyone likes them.
Yeah, friends
chill
with everyone, like
AF.
That meme goes.
They are chill AF.
So that was a good question. That's the kind of question as I'm hoping for.
Oh, Felix's would be the Philly fanatic.
whatever, you'd be some sort of Armenian tiger.
Yo, the Philly fanatic fucks.
with his nose.
I'm telling you.
Another question. Yeah.
All right, let's keep it a little light up top and go with who's your pick for sexiest historical leftist?
Sexiest historical leftist?
Probably young Stalin.
That's a good answer.
That one's pretty good. I mean, there's a few. Gramsci was cute. He had good hair. He looked like he was in a band. Hmm. Like a bad band, but, you know.
Yeah.
Passable.
Zhu Enlai was very handsome.
Yeah,
man.
He was fine.
He was a snack and a half.
Yeah.
I'm going to say
he got to the top of the Communist Party just on looks.
Yeah, well,
people were just like, sir, you're going to the next level. You're just too hot.
He also had the best anecdote. Here he is. You fine?
Oh, nice.
Like, gorgeous bone structure, great brows, and like, really excellent hair. Like, grooming head to toe.
Yeah.
Another easy answer would be Che or Fidel.
They're both snacks. Very snack-worthy.
Both extremely snackable. But I'm going to say Ho Chi Minh.
Okay.
Everyone's favorite Volsel.
That's why he's sexy.
Yeah.
Hottest historical socialist? How about Adolf Hitler?
Okay, that was the next question. Let's keep them going.
All right, going a little deeper. This is one that interests me as I was listening to the show before I came on. But something you guys brought up, this is from user Moonout1. Something you guys said which genuinely interested me is that Donald Trump winning the presidency would ruin the show. I think you said it around election night. Why did you think that specifically, and do you think that's still the case? So I guess just in general, what has Trump's presidency done with your guys' ability to do comedy and do the show? And also, third, Will, why do you hate us?
I'll answer the last one first.
Oh, look who just dropped in.
Who's that at the door?
It's wacky podcast favorite, Felix Biederman.
To answer the last question first, no, I don't hate you, but however... If I can put up with your gentle ribbing of where's the show? Why isn't the show ready? Why does the show suck? And every comment or thing I do, or basically my job, picked apart to an incredible degree by a very devoted following, then you can take my, again, light ribbing that you are a bunch of swine. So fair is fair. But to the broader and more serious question, our belief that if Trump became president, it would be impossible to do the show. We all felt that on election night.
Indeed.
And along with the impending sense of doom just in general. But, you know, I mean, I think that was our worst fear. I think we have shown that that's not the case.
How do you make so much noise?
Felix has just entered the room as well.
Who's that at the bathroom door?
Well, it's specific, though, right? Because the thing is, during times when the right wing is in power, the left gets enveloped by wishy-washy liberalism. And the example I use with this is when I worked in the offices in an administrative capacity for Democratic Socialists of America, we used to do mailings. And we would use lists of subscriptions to mail people to find memberships. And one of the lists we used was The Nation, which is, you know, the oldest left-wing paper in America. And by the time the war in Iraq rolled around, that list was completely useless because The Nation stopped being a left-wing magazine and started being an anti-Bush magazine. And anything that wasn't Bush got considered left. So everyone kind of watered down any kind of politics. And they're like, there's a crisis here. We don't have time to criticize, you know, larger structures. That we have to focus on getting Bush out of office. And, you know, people completely, it was a massive blow for kind of left culture. So I kind of thought you guys were going to turn into The Daily Show.
Right. And the thing is what, while that has happened to a degree, while we've seen this sort of amorphous liberal left response to Trump, there's also been a real flowering of the fault lines, a real deepening of the crisis point, and a more, like, the reason that these guys have neoliberal memes now is because they are now identified as a distinct and different coalition partner, you know, and with their own agenda and something that you can fight against. And so we could at least differentiate ourselves from that kind of rah-rah anti-establishment stuff by having also a critique of the way to move forward.
I mean, it's a balancing act. But I mean, our contention was that the Hillary presidency would be way funnier than the Trump presidency. And I think that holds up as true in that the Trump presidency is hilarious, don't get me wrong, but it's impossible to satirize
it's
make fun of.
Overload.
It's you just, can't yeah, it's it, beyond like, the veil. You can't, it's not actual satire. It's just noticing something.
And this is a hard line to draw on the show because obviously so much of what comes out of the Trump administration and the people associated with it are funny. Look at what Adomian's done with Gorka or, you know, any of the stuff we talked about on the show, but like at the same time you have to be cognizant of like not going too much, too hard, just talking about what Trump said or did all the time. As funny as it may be, I think that we're still able to do the show because we have a broader...
Folks, you got to be cognizant. Yeah. Always be cognizant.
A broader spectrum, if you will.
I don't think there's any use in pretending that like everything in the culture, literally everything, is worse since Trump won because it's made everyone insane, because every mm-hmm. news cycle is exactly 4 hours long and it makes everyone hyper-reactive and stupid and drives them insane. They become Trump just a sort of sedentary media creature that responds to every stimuli, just slotting in the same responses for everything. And there are some bright spots in there, but no, everything's way worse than it would be if Hillary won. It's worse than it was under Obama.
Not that way worse than if any other Republican had won.
Oh, no, it's yeah. Well, I don't know. I think if any other Republican won, it would be a similar thing.
It would be pretty similar.
But the fact that Trump produces such a visceral personal response just makes everything fucking worse.
Yeah, and people are hysterical.
That's the thing, is that Trump's personal repulsiveness has created a media class hysteria that has not stopped since Election Day. And it's just a prolonged, almost like a neurosis and crisis mode when everything has to refer to Trump in some way. And you have these neurotic obsessions. Well, what constitutes normalizing Trump, and how do we avoid doing that? And what problematic content can I really absorb in this environment? And it just makes everything insanely neurotic.
L News is Trump Watch now.
It's yeah. I think we were correct in our initial assessment that the Hillary Clinton presidency would be a much funnier and more rewarding comedic and satiric target than a Trump one. But I think the good news is like all those same assholes are still out there and they're still going to be with us. And what we said the day after our election show, I think holds up just as true now. We got to defeat these assholes before we can even think about taking on the fuckers who actually control the country.
Indeed.
Okay. Next question.
Great. So I'm going to start combining a few things that several people have asked. One theme that I've seen a few questions of is if you have any advice or thoughts for folks who might not be in major urban areas. I know that we are all speaking as people from New York, but specifically one was, while you guys talk a lot about organization for those who live in major cities, what might you recommend to Chapo listeners who live in rural communities and wish to participate? Do you guys have any thoughts on how to be a leftist outside the cities?
I did that. It's very hard. It's much easier if there's union activity going on in your area. But I mean, there's a reason why politics hinge on urban areas. It is just literally a more advantageous position to be in. because there's more people, and that's just part of what it is. And that tends to be where, you know, sort of municipal machinations of politics are centered.
I'd say one thing to do, go to your local government and see it in action. Go to the city council meetings. See what local issues you can actually address and find other people who have similar concerns.
Usually this stuff is public and people don't know it's public.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to a few when I lived in Bloomington, which is not even like a tiny place. But it was kind of shocking at how big the room was, because it was made to be like a large sort of public thing where they got input from the public, and, you know, no one ever went, but except when there were like massive cuts to the city budget. But yeah, when I was, very rural, it sucked a lot. I think I just there was some SEIU activity going on at the time, and that's basically I just found and know that you might have to drive to find the action.
But I mean, like, for example, going on right now, there's big teacher strikes going on in Oklahoma and Kentucky right
now. Hell yeah, there are.
So
yeah, but that doesn't happen very often.
Well. Yeah, well, if you're in those, I mean, there's an opportunity. I'm going to stay in my lane in this
Actually, one of the things you should do, if you possibly can, is subscribe to Labor Notes, because there are all over the country all kinds of labor battles happening all the time that are not receiving any reportage whatsoever. And you don't know. Maybe you're near to something that's happening that you just don't even know about.
I think that's a good answer.
If you're in the country, you're doing rural things, you're stealing pies off windowsills, your cows stand upright and play banjos, washboards, they pick up a porcupine and play him like an accordion, you can unionize the cow band. You can get together all you and your friends who steal those cooling pies. You can make demands out of the woman who you only see as a smock and maybe some legs. You know, if you're a park ranger, you can demand of the local government, give me better guns so I can kill this bear. You know, let's institute a standardized testing for park rangers they don't get outsmarted by this bear.
Unionize the bear.
The bear is a class enemy. And
the rangers are the bravely standing up to President Trump, who is privatizing our federal park system, giving it over to the picnic stealing bears.
The bear worked at Mar-a-Lago, and before that, RT, follow the money. The other thing is, if you just have a regular, you know, 9 to 5 in the country, which is like the most common job in exurban America, is you're throwing a football through a tire swing. There's no reason you can't demand $15 an hour. So to all the people out there who work at the swimming hole, the tire swing, like I said, if you're a hunter who's always getting full of this rabbit, can somehow dive into trees, how does he do that? A better life is possible. Okay, you're welcome. Don't get mad at me for this.
Perfect. Next question.
Well, because Felix is obviously feeling warm, can we get a full Felix Metal Gear Rundown episode where it outlines the parallels between the Metal Gear series and our current geopolitical climate with all them good critiques?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I will help produce that at some point.
We could stream ourselves playing the game.
No, that would be huge.
That'd be great.
A Felix-led run through of the entire Metal Gear series would be a huge hit.
Okay, a few people have asked variants of this, but... somebody is asking about it. You guys mentioned doing a, like, what is neoliberalism episode at some time, and other people have asked for something along the lines of a leftism or socialism 101. Would you ever consider doing some, like, basic series of, like, going down and, like, really drilling into the building blocks of these ideas?
Like, is that something ABCs of socialism?
Is that something that you could see the show doing?
I mean, there is a book.
I've considered doing that.
I think... maybe Matt and I could do a What is Neoliberalism?
Yeah.
I wrote a brief section in the book. It's sort of an intermission chapter between libs and conservatives called The Call of Neoliberalism, where I try to give a short history of what that ideology is, how it was created, but through the veneer of occult magic and H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Okay, you might actually want to read the ABCs of Socialism for this and not our book. Read our book for entertainment. But
read our book.
The section I wrote was about this is very good.
Yeah, buy the book if you want the thing that you wanted.
It will do the thing that you want it to do.
I've been thinking about trying to put some stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, we should do that. we're very tired.
I can help you with that. I know how to make a YouTube account.
We already have a YouTube account.
But to like the episode on on generally what is neoliberalism, I think could be a good episode. I think like the Marxism 101, I think the Richard Wolff episode was a good, you know, gateway primer. I think they're on a very basic level, like, you know, what is interesting about Marxism? Why is it relevant to the world we live in?
Yeah.
And then like I think Brendan James recommends very highly David Harvey's book as
David Harvey's book, Brief History of Neoliberalism.
Yeah. You guys are in the riff corner now. David Steve Harvey, just something for you guys to think about. This is a adult coloring book. You guys could do the rest of the work at home. I made the outlines for you. You could fill this one out. There was also another Harvey I used, but it was cut.
All right. Next question.
Let's do this. While the show has brought up socialist movement in other countries on occasion, mostly Corbyn and Labour, Chapo is primarily focused on the left in America. Matt has mentioned, with varying levels of seriousness, I think, the lack of revolutionary potential in America and the current future hell world that results from it. As a listener who doesn't live in America, I'm interested in everybody's thoughts on your conception of the relationship of an American socialism with socialism as it does or can exist throughout the rest of the world.
I don't know. Is this a question about internationalism or something?
I think it is. It's just the idea of how do you contextualize politics.
You can't. There's no context. America doesn't have a comparison. We're starting from scratch.
It's just that
it's a very unique state project. We're all kind of flying by the seat of our pants here.
You got to build alliances, but it's hard to do them on equal footing when you're such a hegemon.
Well, I think the Comintern was a good kind of model, but that obviously made more sense when we had the great and noble USSR.
Yeah, it's just so hard to find like the point of, because you're going to have to disentangle Americans, whatever kind of socialist project, from its overseas empire. And doing that is going to require a lot of cooperation with people from other countries along class lines and away from nationalism.
I don't know. Again, I would suggest reading about the Comintern, and it's an easy way to sort of understand why we don't have the conditions right now to have any kind of like international socialism of any political substance or power. So I don't know. We're starting from scratch. We're flying by the seat of our pants, but it'll be fine. It's great.
Okay. I'm not quite sure how to answer that one. So next question.
Big ups to my boy Abdel Al-Sisi for crushing it in the presidential election.
Absolutely.
In Egypt.
Congratulations to
97%. This man is clearly a reformer with results. And his public has rewarded him for it.
He is a nasty hoe, and the people love it.
He has a mandate, he has political capital, and he is going to spend it. Chris, can you please tell the Reddit to ask good questions?
What are your all favorite podcasts?
That is a good question. We have been sort of ending each one of our live shows here on the Toro is sort of a roll call of the shows that we like and listen to and are done by our friends. So just off the top of my head, Street Fight, Champagne Sharks, Come Town, Have You Seen This, Age of Napoleon, No Cartridge, Episode 1, Your Kickstarter Sucks, Go Off Kings, The Sit Down with Mike Racine. What am I forgetting?
The Daily with Michael Barbaro.
The Dollop.
We've extensively covered the podcasts that our friends do, and those are like pretty much the only ones I listen to anymore, but some podcasts that from people who have no idea who we are that I really enjoy are Your Mom's House, Tom Segura and Christine Brzezinski, Deezus and Marrow, one of my all-time favorites, podcast In Memoriam, Combat Jack was incredible.
Combat Jack was great.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? Joe Rogan Experience.
I don't really listen to podcasts.
I would say no podcast is worth listening to.
I listen to every Come Town, and I listen to like FT's The Big Read and FT World Weekly.
Comedy Bang Bang. Little known fact about me. My actual favorite podcast of all time is The Ricky Gervais Show. I know it's unfashionable to, you know, like Ricky Gervais now because he's become such an embarrassing,
really annoying.
So annoying.
Total
However,
plaid.
Honestly, I mean this seriously. The Ricky Gervais Show, and then going through the whole back catalog of the XFM years, got me more into doing what I'm doing now than pretty much anything. That was my biggest podcast influence.
But Will, how can you like something that's produced by an annoying person? How can an artist be annoying?
That's a question fans of our show should ask themselves. But no, Carl Pilkington to me is like one of the great, fascinating characters of our time. I will consume any Pilkington-related product or content. And the fact that Ricky introduced him to the world, for me, forgives every other crime against humanity he's done.
I would say if you're looking for something to listen to for an hour, check out albums.
Okay. Like an audiobook these days?
Or Robert Caro's The Power Broker. You will be listening to that one for quite a while if you are bored and need something to listen to. Okay, next question.
Favorite Adam Sandler movie besides Rain Over Me?
Ugh. Shut the fuck up! Why? I mean, you know, easy answers, Billy Madison, yeah. Happy Gilmore. Those are the two really funny ones.
I would say Happy Gilmore is a more complete film than Billy Madison.
It is.
But Billy Madison was just kind of more fun, I guess. I don't know.
I thought Happy Gilmore was more developed. It was more realized.
Yes, but Billy Madison has some really delightful, absurdist humor and touches in it.
The Steve Buscemi cameo. Exactly. I think Billy Madison may be the better one.
Yeah.
It also has Chris Farley where he's like, that she is one piece of ass. Yeah. I ought to know. And he's like, no, you didn't.
Funny,
no,
you very don't. Funny. It's got
Norm Macdonald's in it.
Memorable bits that I enjoy to this day.
Matt, you were actually talking big about Little Nicky the other day. Ooh. You said that was the best Sandler
film. Well, I enjoyed it when I saw it, that's for sure.
The Wedding Singer was also enjoyable.
Looking back, I think, wow, I really did not know what comedy was at that time.
We used to think our lives were so simple, and we watched The Wedding Singer. Now it's 2018, and we have to watch The Brian Singer. Damn.
I have not seen Little Nicky, but I did watch Jesse on Go Off Kings try to play the Little Nicky Game Boy Advance game, and he was having just so much trouble with it, so I don't think the movie's worth your while.
All right, next question.
Here's one that I like. It's phrased as, who is the worst person in Congress, and why is it Claire McCaskill? which I think is funny, but maybe in a different way to do it. Do you all have a particular person that you find loathsome? Like my guy is Marco Rubio. They're all awful, but he's the one that I always find the most ire in my heart for.
For me, it is no contest. Chuck Schumer.
Oh God,
the biggest sleazeball there is. Just a repellent scum.
It's a tough one. It's definitely a race to the bottom there. I guess I got to go with that old standby, Steve King, who was a literal Nazi.
I was going to say Steve King. That guy
is one of the most contemptible people.
I tend to just think of it as like a rogues gallery, and I don't develop particular emotional relationships.
I will say that I have hated Mitch McConnell for longer than any other American politician. Yeah. So just by sheer length of time of hating him, he's got to be at the top.
Peter King is also a very bad person. And I don't know, Daryl Issa has to be up there. He's retired.
Actually,
now.
I kind of like Daryl Issa because of how openly, brazenly corrupt and sleazy he is.
And how he owned himself by paying millions of dollars to get this petition signed to recall Gray Davis because he thought he was going to win. And then Schwarzenegger just bowls in and takes it from him. Just totally flushed millions of dollars down the toilet to get somebody else elected fucking governor. Cuck.
Daryl is
also
cucked himself.
Several on Chris's lines. Paul Ryan.
Repellent.
Awful.
Viscerally repellent figure.
It's like the ones that are like have the hideous politics, but also have this like Jeff Flake, that asshole. All the guys who have hideous politics, but like this good guy family man. Ben Ass, those guys honestly revolt me more than even the Steve Kings or Louis Gohmerts of the world, who look like fucking oaky gargoyles.
For the longest time, James Einhoff was my least favorite. I thought he did a sort of disproportionate amount of damage. He was half Steve King, and then he just put so much energy into sort of climate change denialism that may end up killing more people than anyone there. But of course, Rubio, Ben's ass. But I did have a favorite shitty senator who's no longer with us, unfortunately, Mark Kirk. Hmm. He was like as bad as one of those.
He's not with us anymore?
Oh, no. Oh, he lost. He just lost. No, I'm not saying he's dead. He just lost.
Well, he had that brain tumor, right?
He had a brain tumor, and it made him behave very coolly.
Euphemism, though, where you're like, he's no longer with us.
Yeah. So he had a brain. He did have a brain problem, and it made him even cooler. And when he was running against Tammy Duckworth, who ended up beating him, he was like, someone asked him some weird question about Lindsey Graham, and he's like, Lindsey Graham is a player with no hose. And he legitimately said that, and people were like, what? And he went, oh, it's a South Side thing. And he's like from fucking Calumet.
Bang, bang. Felix, remind me, didn't you get kicked off Twitter because you changed your display name to Mark Kirk Press Secretary?
Yeah, that was the first time I got suspended, as by your logic, was because Mark Kirk was just killing it. He said Tammy Duckworth won't stand up for veterans. Tammy Duckworth lost her legs, and what else? The pimp with no hose, a brother with no hose. He said he was a bro with no hose. That's what it was.
Yeah, bro with no hoe.
He stole valor at a campaign event. He's just all around kicks ass, and I was like, this guy fucking rules.
Let's just say Lindsey Graham is a down low brother.
Yeah. But anyway, that was my favorite shitty guy, and my least favorite shitty guy was probably like Einhof.
It's a good question, but generally I agree with Amber. Like, when I think about Congress and the Senate and anyone in and out of it, I just think of them all as just demons.
Well,
just
like, I just think demons. Of them as actually kind of like a rat king.
Yes, you know? Like all their tails are tied together.
It doesn't actually make too much sense to individuate them unless you're dealing with a local issue.
Oh, one more is coming to me now, just like from beyond the veils of time. Fucking Tom Cotton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dead zone. Oh, my God.
That guy is Greg Stilson.
We were talking about this the other day. We made fun of this on the show. He was the guy who's like, my favorite thing is to go jogging every day at 5 a.m. so I can reward myself by eating birthday cake every night. But my real reward is when I drain the blood out of a small boy and then drink it while I plan to start World War III.
I would love for Tom Cotton to reward himself with some yellow cake in the morning.
Okay. Tom Cotton. Oof.
Bad dude.
Oh,
bad.
Baphomet. Jesus.
Big rat and the rat king.
Well, while we're talking about electoral politics and the awfulness of it, this might land more towards Virgil, but genuine prediction question. I know it's early, but what do you all honestly think is going to happen in 2018 elections?
The Democrats will win back the House and possibly the Senate. I would lean towards probably the Senate, but it's obviously very close. I'd say it's a 50-50 proposition right now. It would obviously be easier if McCain, left his seat and that were another open seat.
I wouldn't be surprised if they couldn't get their shit together, though. Yeah. I mean, they're running around like chickens with their dumb heads cut off.
And they've got a very uphill climb against gerrymandering and voter suppression. I think that the Republicans squeak by with a very small 2 or 3 seat majority.
I'd like to, as the objective neutral party here, Matt, of course, always bets on the worst possible outcome. He's a strong bettor on the doom scenario. But thus far, Virgil has gotten the better of these bets going.
There's gerrymandering, but Democrats haven't exactly been hobbled in these special elections recently, and it's not they're not going to show like they're not going to win in 2018 the House popular vote by like a 20-point margin or something like you saw in Alabama and the Pennsylvania special election. But I would say they're on track for an historic something like a 10-point. Romp there,
which would
be more than enough to win back the House, even despite gerrymandering.
It would seem like the House money is on the Democrats taking back the House, midterm wave election, sort of unpopular president.
Oklahoma teachers are asking for $10,000 raises for teachers, $5,000 for support staff, and $200 million in education funding. Sorry, I actually never watch cable news, and then whenever we go on tour, I start watching it again. And it's psychotic because all of these people have lost their minds. But sometimes the crawler will actually give me an interesting piece of news. And I'm very excited about that. In between, rambling about Trump and Russia.
The Easter Bunny.
The Easter Bunny, yeah.
Sorry, just to complete my thought. What I was saying is The House money would be on the Democrat, this being a wave election for the Democrats, but what disturbs me is that this will be a replay of the 2006 wave election for the Democrats, where, you know, we've talked about this before, Rahm recruited, like, you know, every Iraq war veteran who likes the West Wing to run for Congress or whatever. And it, you know, worked in the short term, but of course was a huge failure in the long run. And I was thinking about that just the other day. I know you guys saw that article about the huge percentage of like ex-spooks and military people who are running as Democrats.
Yeah, that's awesome.
They're
running in primaries.
They're going to win.
The
CIA Democrats are going to win.
CIA Democrats are going to win their primaries.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, Dems love large, shadowy institutions right now more than anything. They want them to scoop in and...
They do.
Yeah, because American liberals have never been fucking doves. They've always been the biggest hawks. They've always been pushed so many of our interventions, working hand in hand with the outgrowth.
So everyone who votes in a Democratic primary is pro-war and pro-CIA is what you're arguing.
Not every single candidate, but the plurality of candidates that win will be the CIA Democrats. Yeah.
I mean,
do you think the Democratic Party is not...
That's always been true. There have No, I mean, there have been anti-war liberals. It hasn't been for a very long time, but there's nothing necessarily intractable about like hawkishness and liberalism.
That question of what that next Congress will do, what it will look like, and I don't have very high hopes for it, is separate, I think, from the yes or no question of will the Democrats win back the House? And obviously the money's on Democrats there. You talk about gerrymandering. Well, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which knocked down the Republican partisan gerrymander of the state, that stands to get Democrats maybe a fifth or a quarter of the way to winning back the House in one state alone.
Also, though, don't forget that Donald Trump's approval ratings are slowly but surely climbing. They are up.
Yeah, from 39 to 41.
Yeah, into the 40s.
That's something to brag about?
Well,
that's...
I mean, we have a few more months of decent bubble economy and boom.
Yeah, but I also think like you're recognizing a trend, which is actually possibly a blip.
Well, we'll see.
I think his numbers are pretty much baked in by now.
You feel a raindrop and think there's going to be a flood.
I mean, a war is really the only thing that could scramble the calculations. But, you know,
good thing we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, good thing.
Next question.
Well, no, hang on. Let me finish this off. But people are experiencing positive economic conditions, yet still oppose the president, yet still oppose the Republican Party. So I don't think they're necessarily going to vote for this economy, or rather give Republicans and Trump credit for this economy.
Just real quick, I want to update the listeners on Felix's doodles. It was what appeared to be a shopping cart with busting written over it with exclamation marks.
That's sort of a Trojan horse.
And then it sucks spelled S-U-C-H-S. It suches. Just and I think maybe a shot glass or window of some kind. I don't know.
I was drawing a bird, but it said, you know, what if he didn't have wings? Something to think about.
All right, next question.
Here's one for Matt. Charles X versus Napoleon III. Who were the bigger French fail-son monarch?
Well, Napoleon III can't really be a fail-son because he actually ruled France for way longer than the original Napoleon did. He ended up getting deposed, but I mean that's sort of par for the course for any kind of great man of history. So
this is France.
So I think he's he as goofy as he is, it really is more just an indictment of the society that produced him. The same way you can't call Donald Trump a fail son, no matter how much of a wretched bulbous wad of privilege he is. So I guess you got to go Charles X.
Why does Felix play trash like Fortnite instead of PUBG?
Ooh.
Shots fired.
PUBG doesn't work. It's filled with cheaters. It's boring. Everything in it looks ugly. It's the worst interpretation of the real engine. The ballistic physics are terrible. The only time I tried to play, I didn't do very well. I can't play with my friends Michael and Chet and Aaron, who are really good at the game, and secure me squad and duo wins. And finally, you should never compete with the Chinese. Let them have it. I respect them, and I want them to take over PUBG.
It is buggier. That's true for a game that, you know, just now came out of beta a few months ago. That being said, I never had a problem with the ballistics in it. I thought they were pretty good. Also, cheating, like that's a huge thing in Fortnite now too.
No, it isn't. I'm just Mr. Too Damn Good.
Fortnite is, there's a building element. PUBG is more luck-based also, I feel,
I
than Fortnite.
I hate that building shit. I watched you playing fucking Fortnite. It just looks like you're building a deck.
Well, that's that reductive bullshit. You can introduce it to any game. You can reduce it to the games that you liked when you were a kid, the E.T. game that they dumped in the landfill in New Mexico. Somehow more racist version of Custer's Revenge you made your parents get you.
Oh, God.
Like, they got you Custer's Revenge rated NC-17. They're like, oh, we've added a new type of racism to this one. And, you know, that one, that's just a gen. You could be reductionist with all those, like, oh, Mario is just, this is whatever Italians see when they close their eyes. Yeah, true, but there's so much more than that. Okay, Sonic, oh, this is just a, this is, you know, a metaphor for the spectacle or whatever you guys would say. You know, any of you who'd say that, the train table simulator, you're just scheduling when the trains come. Yeah, and?
I will say that the one thing PUBG has that Fortnite doesn't have and I don't think will have is you can drive a car in it. It's fun. And a boat.
It's rumored that vehicles are coming to the next
season
of Fortnite.
The map is so small, though. Would be OP.
You know what's the best thing about maps? You can always make them bigger.
That is the best thing about them.
I take no position on...
There's so many good things about maps.
Well, yeah.
If you're trying to zero down on what the best thing about maps...
That's definitely it.
I take no position on PUBG, or Fortnite, but... I do take a position on the film Battle Royale, on which all of this is based. See Battle Royale.
Check it out.
Very good.
It's a delight. Popcorn classic.
I don't like the CGI blood.
Okay, you talked about this a little at the shows yesterday, so maybe you'd want to expand on it. What entertainment / art of the past couple years do y'all think reflects the Trump era, either intentionally or unintentionally?
There's this documentary I saw called Idiocracy. I think it predicted a lot of what happened.
That's a good question. What do you think?
Burn After Reading.
Yeah. The Coen brothers' Burn After Reading really feels appropriate for the era we're living in. We were also talking earlier about Iannucci and The Thick of It. Again, yeah. I think being very indicative of, as Amber said, not the politics of our era, but the office politics of our era and the sort
the
of...
office politics of politics.
Yeah. I find that very telling and sort of prescient when I return to it.
Yeah, Iannucci in general, I think, is very strong about that. But I would also say, like, to say something is of its time, like, literally everything is of its time. Like, you know, the Big Bang Theory is a Trump is a Trump era piece of art or whatever. I guess it started before then or whatever.
Yeah,
but
no, it's all bungler all the way.
Now it is.
Obama actually created that show. That's how he burst onto the map. People were like, why is the head writer of the Big Bang Theory speaking at the DNC? Then boom, he's president. Never judge a book by its cover.
I've never seen this television
show. But no, I think this is perfect. What's Big Bang Theory was the sitcom of the Obama era. And Roseanne is going to be that one of the Trump era. She's already got massive ratings. She's going to overwhelm that show.
Maybe. But also, I think it just started, and there's probably going to be a drop off if it's not funny. But that bad Tim Allen show where he's a vlogger.
Last Man Standing.
Yeah, yep. He's a vlogger who pretends to be an outdoorsman, but really he's a small business owner and spends all his time yelling on the internet.
Yeah,
he's a marketing guy.
That's pretty...
But they canceled that after Trump won.
I know, yeah.
Because he was too dangerous to have on television.
But really, it's redundant. You don't need that show if Trump's president.
But also, yeah. Just every show that is on... now is exists in that moment. I don't think you should necessarily like try and comb through art historically to try and find some sort of representative like piece of art. I think you're going to find some things that maybe address politics or cultural moods a little more finely than others, but I mean, it's not always going to be so literally didactic as
I think
Tim Allen.
But I mean, I think you can find, like, in a subjective sense, like something that gives you from the past that reminds you of the way you feel now or channels it in a certain way.
Possibly, but it may not be the things we're identifying now.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
Matt, didn't you have a theory that Tim Allen only has a TV show when there's a Democrat president?
That was Alex Nichols. He wrote that.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He's 100% correct.
Right, yeah.
He is the repressed American male. And then once he becomes embodied in the White House, he just dries up and falls off like a vestigial organ.
Okay, we will see Tim Allen back on TV 2020.
Well, one of the things we talked about last night at the show was this Roxane Gay article about the new Roseanne sitcom, which basically says, I'm not watching it because things are too serious now to enjoy problematic pop culture, yep, and the people who create it, because Roseanne Barr, the comedian, and Roseanne Barr, the character, are both Trump supporters on this show. And, you know, Roseanne's piece was sort of worrying that by exposing ourselves to this, it's a danger to our culture, or it's irresponsible in some way to air the views of
it legitimizes
it. Oh, as she said,
it normalizes the president.
I think the point I tried to make last night at the show, maybe after drinking a little too much, was the idea that if negative pop culture is going to make things worse, then you would have to take seriously the idea that positive pop culture makes things better. And I think our current reality has fairly conclusively proved that it doesn't make any things better.
Well, I think there's very little positive pop culture.
I meant positive in this, like it's not Trump, progressive.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, look, Parks and Rec ran for 9 million seasons and Hillary didn't win.
It's true.
Art does not fucking produce politics.
When you look,
politics produces art.
When you look,
putting the cart before the fucking horse.
When you look at what the cultural moment was in 2016, in terms of what programming was being put on television, basically everything except for $1 Million Extreme, World Peace, it was just a universal progressivism that said, even if we're not on agreement on economic issues, we know that diversity is good and inclusivity is good, and this Trumpism is backwards, revanchist, and wrong. And he won. That means it's not working. It doesn't have the effect you think it does. Either way.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of a flat analysis. It can have an effect. Representation such as, seeing gay people on television encourage gay people to come out of the closet and be more visible, leading to
a rapid shift in acceptance, affecting a body politic. And also, I'm sorry, I'm not entirely sure you can say that the TV didn't follow the culture. There are millions of gay people that have been extremely active since the 60s trying to, one, get basic rights, and two, yes, quote unquote, normalize homosexuality. Yeah. It was a TV show, that's kind of dumb and insulting, and I think historically inaccurate.
I mean, it's a capitalist enterprise. They're never going to say we need to promote this idea for its own good. That goes against the profit motive. They have to feel that they are serving a demographic that they can make money from, and so they're always going to be following the trend. And if there's a progressive trend, they follow it. Now, you might say that they reinforce it once they followed it, but they're still following the social movement, not the other way around.
I think it can simultaneously be true that culture is more affected by politics and vice versa, but that it is not totally unimportant. I mean, I don't think it's possible. I don't think we can say definitively that there is no negative effect from culture. I think that the militarization of our shows and movies after 9/11, like, we always had a military twinge to all our entertainment. We always lionized it and lionized, like, the big cool hero who kills everybody. But especially after 9/11, when we attached this morality arc to it, I think it was one of the most brutally effective propaganda campaigns.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Probably the most effective of my lifetime. But that's not to say that it wasn't, people who write shows and people who produce shows and movies and write scripts, they're as affected by politics as anyone else. And I think they can be affected by, like, you know, the president going out there and saying it's okay, we killed X amount of people because it's for this greater good, and everyone lining up behind it. But at the same time, the stuff they do does matter. I just don't think it matters to the extent that it is political activism to consume or not consume.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting for us specifically because we are propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
We're not an intellectual project, but we are definitely propaganda. We're just stupid. But I think, what we are trying to do is definitely, we're trying to be funny, first and foremost. But we do want our politics to be more visible. Now, I would love to think that that is going to have a massive effect on people, but I think the best thing it can do is actually sort of serve as a focal point for things that already existed, but were kind of floating around without anything cultural to tether to.
I think it's important to, I think like in all this discussion about like media and entertainment and the art which we consume, I think it's important to say, like, it's not to say it's bad that the stories that we collectively share as a culture are beginning to be told by a more diverse group of people that more reflects accurately the world we live in. However, I think we're living in a moment now that shows that it's possible to win the culture war, which is no small thing, but lose politics entirely. And I think it's worth examining why that's the case and what effect investing so much heavily in the culture at the detriment of overall politics. Does that make sense?
To the detriment. I would agree.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think we've reached a point at which culture has become a substitute for politics and not a supplement.
Because it's the arena in which liberals have won and still are winning, which again is not a small thing. Just look how angry it makes right wingers, which is good and funny to me.
Making right wingers angry isn't necessarily going to give us any footing. No. Yeah.
I don't think we should try to be like polite or cater to them either, but
my proposition is simple as this: in the absence of anything resembling an ideological education that can help you make sense of history and the world in which you live, people will use the narrative structures that they learn in films and television and apply those to the world to explain things, which leads, of course, to conspiracy theory bullshit. Like Roseanne famously said the other night, I love the QAnon stuff. It's like a movie.
Yeah,
I'm like a character in a video game. And to that point, Felix is absolutely correct that the militarism of our films, where, you know, you have this Joseph Campbell shit about a hero's journey and narrative and things like that. Yeah. Like these narrative structures, which appear over and over again out of, you know, capitalist Hollywood, I think they definitely have a negative impact in the way people view the world. And I think you can draw a distinction between these kinds of films that have a Western capitalist narrative structure and what you could conceive of socialist cinema.
But as Felix pointed out, that huge wave of war propaganda, it was also done in congruence with three cable news channels of 24 hours a day of war propaganda.
Oh, sure.
So again, I think culture as supplement and a way of kind of coalescing ideas that are floating around, you know, disconnected. I mean, at some point you arrive in this kind of chicken-egg argument,
yeah.
Which, I mean, whatever, we could all read Roland Barthes or something, but... But I do think, and I think we would all agree here, at least to a large extent, that the current mode of culture analysis is this deranged kind of miasma theory.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you watch the bad thing, it will infect you with the bad ideas. And if you watch the good thing, it will infect you with the good ideas. So you must always be vigilant and never consume anything that you're not going to agree with, because it could trick you and it could change you and bewitch you into becoming right wing or reactionary somehow.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's why I would say that if you wanted to fight politics, do politics at some ground, investing in education is more important than trying to change mass media.
I hate to be like this, but like a liberal arts education is good for people. A little bit of artistic analysis, I think, does make you a better sort of consumer of culture.
I think a lot of the stuff about harmful views is sort of a smokescreen for you don't like somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like this.
How many people do you think are going to be swayed by Kevin D. Williamson? How many people are going to read his overwrought Count Dracula prose and see his Minge the Merciless...
Count Chocula, please.
His Count Chocula prose and his Minge the Merciless facial hair and just be totally entranced by this guy who writes like he's wearing a poet shirt? Really not that many.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
people gravitate
in general,
towards what they want to hear,
right, in
first of all.
In general... Like, you don't get your mind changed that often. You get your mind changed by, like, material circumstances befalling or benefiting you, but you don't necessarily always read an op-ed. We live in this very blinkered media world where we think everyone is just is at the whims of whoever can make the best argument.
Yeah.
And I think that at all of us are sedentary media obsessed oaths, all of us. Mm. And I think that the way that you try to pretend that that's not the case is by saying that there is a harmfulness to all these, like that, you know, Williamson is going to, he's going to bring down the good name of the Atlantic, or he's going to make everyone, you know, psychotic, anti-choice authoritarians like him, when really it just, you don't like the guy because, can I fucking blame you? Look at him.
Yeah,
look
course.
At you. But it's not any more dangerous than what these places already write.
Yep.
And I think the point to be made about Kevin D. Williamson is, or other obnoxious figures like him who get these media positions, is that they are the product of a right-wing movement and the institutions that spawn by them that has been done a very good job of funding and promoting these people, regardless of their talent or worth, because they sell a line that is convenient and... you know, it affects the bottom line of the people who fund it. Yeah. But as an ideological and political project, they have done a very good job of funding and building the kind of institutions that would allow for someone like Kevin Williamson or Meghan McArdle to get these positions of influence in the media to share their thoughts. That is more dangerous than any given individual.
And if I have like any single bit of advice for anyone who is still on Twitter for some reason, I don't know why, it's not that funny anymore. Quit getting mad that so-and-so gets hired for a publication. Literally, who cares? It is a bourgeois press making a bourgeois decision for its own bottom line. It's not for you. It's not a democratic thing. Seeing your own ideas reflected in the bourgeois media is not going to bring about political change anyway. Like, none of this stuff means anything. It's just... I hate to be a Matt here, but it's a media spectacle.
Be a Matt.
Don't be a Matt.
Yeah, be a
yes,
Matt.
Yes, Mr. Christman. Everything is the spectacle. All right, one more questions.
So kind of combining something that a lot of people have mentioned in different things, this is kind of a two-parter. A lot of people are asking, oh, can you tour here? Can you tour there? I don't know if you guys want to talk about like what you're thinking about in terms of touring, especially at the end of this tour.
So our, and nothing's set in stone right now, except that in August, we plan to do an East Coast tour, roughly going from Boston to DC, though hopefully we can do some other fun places around there that's not out of the way, maybe Providence, you know, or I was thinking even Portland, Maine.
It's like 12
that's
people.
That's way
dude.
The fuck yeah, out there, dude.
Is that too far from Boston?
It's like a 12-hour drive from Boston, dude.
Or maybe Burlington, Vermont could be fun.
There's probably people in Burlington.
But back to the original, we do have plans to do a Midwest swing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I would really, really love to do a Southern swing as well.
Oh, indeed.
Like Nashville, Memphis, Austin, Atlanta, New Orleans.
I'd like to do Canada.
Canada would be great, yeah.
There were a few people asking about international.
We also have like a weirdly outsized number of Irish fans.
Yes. This is not total bullshit,
also,
though.
Also, a lot of them are really attractive, so okay. We should definitely go there.
Well, we did bring this up when we were in L.A. We did have a meeting with our managers and tour agents about upcoming tours, and one of the things we did... one of the things we did mention was a tour of the UK, Scotland, and Ireland. I think that would be fantastic. We'd be looking to do that probably early 2019.
London, Manchester,
Edinburgh,
like
Dublin, and maybe Belfast.
Yeah.
That would be incredible. I would love to do that because we, as Amber says, we do have an outsized Irish audience
who love our understanding.
They love Matt's impressions of them.
They love our
Matt's
going to
get his ass kicked.
I'm going to go there and I'm going to talk like this and I'm not going to get my ass kicked. I'm going to be elected T-Psych or whatever you call it. The prime minister.
That's their like Congress.
Yes.
That's the body.
Yes. The Dale Earn. Yes.
It's nice to go on like a cute little tourist town like Ireland or the UK with no real history or culture. But we're going to the cultural lifeblood of the world eventually, the Great Lakes region.
No, really, we
the
are
waters of Earth.
We are plotting a Great Lakes region tour, and I am more excited for it than anything. No, it's not because I was a loser when I lived there. No, it's not because I'm going to meet every old boss from every, you know, front desk at the gym or whatever job that I had. No, I'm not going to show up everybody. No, I'm not going to do any of that.
Can
I'm
we
just
do the
have
bar
a good time? No resentments.
Can
I
we do the bar that you were a bouncer at?
Yes. Not because I have any point to prove at all. I'm not a person who holds grudges or resentments or remembers things. I'm not that type of guy. I'm positive.
I will actually be demanding that we make the plane fly around the state of Indiana because I don't even want to go over it.
Chasing at you out of pitchforks and getaway music.
Oh, I know what I know what the Midwest tour is called. The hunt for Jerry Dunk's headphones.
So Midwest, maybe October, sometime late fall, early winter. You know,
yeah, we were thinking to do it in Midwest when it's cold out because we have a desperate audience.
Yeah,
and people are
nothing.
So bored.
You got
they have nothing.
Nothing
to do.
Gotta be us.
Yeah, that's why we always kill each other in the winter.
And another one is, and you know, it might be, you know, it's kind of short notice to put this together, but maybe this summer, Southwest, Denver would be a blast to go to, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas.
That'd be dope.
You
want
to go to Las Vegas in July?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to really go outside in Vegas ever. But the only thing that's like really for sure now is East Coast, like the, you know, East Coast tour. Sorry, I know it's the stereotype. We're from the East Coast, but
yeah, we're not all from.
Well, we're based there now. In August, in conjunction with the book,
August book tour.
So Boston, Philadelphia, New York, DC.
Oh, one thing I can tell you though is, you know, we do have a number of fans in Australia, but we promise to never go to Australia. That is our vow to you. You can come here. There are spiders there. Something like a bingo. These awful animals that box, I hate them so much.
Virgil, the toilets go the other way. Think how scary that'll be for you.
Repulsive. All sorts of snakes, scorpions, that
yeah.
sort of
oh,
thing.
Oh, God. The most poisonous everything is in Australia.
Death rays.
Sharks.
Sharks. They have this awful reef that I've heard terrible
good,
things
good,
about.
You know, the good news, it's dying.
Oh, okay.
We're done with that reef. It's not scary anymore.
They have kookaburra, which eat like giant pieces of raw meat.
I'm told you have a large trash island there, so no thank you.
All right, then this is going to be the last one. Probably the most important question I saw in this thread. Anime, yes or no?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Interesting that in one corner of the room, there are people disparaging anime when their two favorite shows, Frasier and Cheers, were based on manga. I'm sipping the tea, though.
There's so much wrong with that statement.
I'm agnostic, but I would like to encourage you all to never contact me about anime again.
If you guys have questions about anime,
no,
Takeshi 69,
no.
Any of the other SoundCloud guys I like,
no,
anything from Japan, contact Virgil.
No.
I'm the most pro anime, and I just like to say yes, the majority of it is garbage, but that is same is true of all artistic genre. And to blatant, just completely write off an entire style of art and cinema is to me
what's your
boorish
favorite polka
and foolhardy.
Band?
None of them.
Yeah, so some genres are.
Yeah. Better than
okay, there is no polka Akira, or if there is, I'd like to see it. There's no, you know, didgeridoo Ghost in the Shell. Is didgeridoo a kind of music? I'm going to get some angry tweets over this.
It's an instrument.
Yeah, it's an instrument, but it's also a style of music.
Matt's favorite music is just parade music in any city in America that has too many Eastern European
people. He loves
John
Philip Sousa marches. Yeah.
Matt plays the cymbals in his sleep.
Matt loves Swiss yodeling. Few people know this.
So style of cinema. Is there a single region of the world you just say no good movies there, turning it off? Turning
not
it away
everything
from
that comes. Okay, first of all, it's racist that you think that every piece of art that comes from Japan is anime. Like for
no,
fuck's sake.
I no, I did not say
it
that.
It has nothing to do with a region of the world. It is
yes,
a
it
genre.
Does.
Half of the
what?
Shit is made in fucking
oh, this
like
debate
Korea
again.
And shit.
Oh boy.
I thought you had to be Japanese to be anime.
No, anime, Amber is right. Anime is a genre.
Oh my God.
I thought we settled this last time.
No, we just got a big fight over it. Then we got dinner. We got tired.
Ghost in the Shell, Akira, thumbs up.
All of you, none of you can just enjoy a piece of media and not have a big argument about it. I hereby forbid you from watching anything that isn't the MTV shows about 20-year-olds with gauges who get each other pregnant, and they all have arguments that begin and end with, I don't know why you're pissed.
That's fine. All you can watch. Watch that anyway.
You guys are going to get into an argument about that because Will calls them MTV shows, and Amber's like, actually, those shows were on other stations before MTV. And then I'm going triple Benoit. On this whole podcast, we're going up Benoit style, boys.
Matt will insist that they're reality, that they're game shows when they're not game shows. Yeah.
What?
Even if there's a prize, there's not a game show.
He'll say that a 16 and pregnant is actually a video game. That's why it's bad.
No.
He's like, this is technically pornography.
Look, stuff like Survivor is a game show.
No, it's a reality show.
It's a game show.
No, it's a game show. Survivor's a game show.
Is Big Brother a game show?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know.
Big Brother is a reality show.
Is there a game?
There's a prize at the end of if you're the last one there.
All right, guys.
Then it's a game.
Bullshit. It's a reality show.
West Coast, we love you.
We're very tired.
We'll see you back.
Incredibly tired.
We'll see you back in Brooklyn, everybody.
Bye-bye,
folks. Do not contact us with any further questions. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye. See you back in New York.
Bye.